It's a fundamental principle of our legal system that justice not only be done, but be seen to be done. The court should be open and the media free to report on proceedings. But the man at the centre of our next story is an exception to that rule. He's a forensic patient, one of about 1,500 in Australia, and they inhabit a zone of silence within the justice system. As Background Briefing's Tom Morton explains, the man known as Patient A has been fighting a legal battle for the right to use his own name in the media.
Everybody who comes in contact with me and tells me, what the hell are you doing here in the maximum security mental hospital in New South Wales and Australia? It is not about me and my diagnosis and mental illness. It's also about the system that is holding me in here and injecting me against my will at the expense of taxpayers.
That's the man we'll call Patient A. Patient A came to Australia as a refugee from Iran in 1983. He worked for some years as a court interpreter for the Community Relations Commission of New South Wales. One day in January 2002, he set fire to the offices where he worked. One of his colleagues died of smoke inhalation. Patient A was charged with murder. In 2003, he was found not guilty of murder and not guilty of manslaughter by reason of mental illness. At that point, he became a forensic patient.
A forensic patient is somebody, importantly, who the courts have found not guilty on account of their mental illness, but because of the seriousness of their charge and because of their risk to the community, will require ongoing detention, initially in custody in a jail, but then after that, usually in a high secure forensic hospital, such as the forensic hospital or a medium secure unit in one of the other hospitals in New South Wales.
Dr. Adrian Keller, clinical director of the forensic hospital where Patient A is held. Forensic patients can't apply for parole. Their cases are reviewed every 6 months by the Mental Health Review Tribunal. And under the New South Wales Mental Health Act, they can't be named. There are tight restrictions on what the media can report about their cases.
There are good reasons for that. We discuss intimate psychiatric detail about persons who may have, in their illness, created a complete train wreck for their lives and for their loved ones.
The president of the New South Wales Mental Health Review Tribunal, Professor Dan Howard.
And rather analogous to the health privacy rules and regulations that we have, the policy view is that it's proper that we take a similar approach to these patients to enable these things to be discussed openly at our hearings without concern that they will be reported, that they will be named and shamed and have this ongoing trauma which they are trying to recover from.
In a twist that might have come straight from a Kafka novel, Patient A wants to breach his own privacy. He wants his name to be used and his case discussed in the media. Patient A's lawyer, Peter O'Brien.
He's been of the view for a number of years that he hasn't been treated fairly in the criminal justice system. He believes that he hasn't been treated fairly in the Mental Health Review Tribunal process as well. There's a number of concerns as to his treatment. I think that it was his intention to have those things aired in public and also the efforts that he was making to secure his release. He wanted simply, I think, his name to be attributed to his own case.
Patient A has applied to the Mental Health Review Tribunal and the Supreme Court for permission to use his name and tell his story. But until now, that permission has been denied. The psychiatrists who are treating Patient A have argued that it wouldn't be in his best interests to have his case discussed in the media.
Sometimes what a patient believes is in their best interest may not necessarily be what the treating team or the prevailing psychiatric view about that patient would agree with. They might think that broadcasting could in fact be harmful to their recovery. So we need to listen to evidence about those things and balance them up.
Until now, the Mental Health Review Tribunal has refused Patient A's application to use his name. They relied on advice from Justice Health, which runs the forensic hospital, that allowing him to tell his story in the media could aggravate his mental illness. In their view, Patient A is a vulnerable individual who needs protecting from himself. But there's a growing body of expert opinion that challenges this presumption. Lawyer and academic Sasha Callahan.
Now, this is a way in which you can see that the whole idea of vulnerability can actually be used really to restrict someone's ability to vindicate their rights. It's actually used in an oppressive way. For whose protection is this suppression order being given when the person who is the subject of the order has repeatedly said they want the case to be reported on and they're told that this isn't possible? So in the very least, there is cause for a reasonable suspicion that suppression in this context isn't appropriate.
That's Sasha Callahan from the Centre for Values, Ethics and the Law in Medicine at Sydney University. And you can hear Tom Morton's full report on Background Briefing this Sunday morning after the 8 o'clock news right here on RN.